The Southern California Linux Expo proudly presents Larry McVoy.
The source world is you sacrifice time to market in order to maintain quality, right? I mean, it's really, you know, your two choices are time to market or quality, and you pick one. Okay, so moving away from Linux for a moment, just to open source in general, one thing that's worth asking is scaling actually a problem? Right, you know, I'm sitting here telling you, oh, you know, I'm going to show you this cool model and it scales and da-da-da-da-da. Reality is, nah, it's not a problem. Because in spite of all the hype, most projects are really small. Most projects are one guy. There's like, you know, I don't know, the SourceForge guys love to say there's 9 bazillion projects on SourceForge. Most of them don't even have any code checked in. The ones that do have any code checked in, most of them are one guy. Some of them have a half a dozen people. Very, very few of them have more than 20 people. So most, if you were just looking at it statistically for all the projects in the world, I would guess that 98% of them, 98% of them, what I'm talking about here today is completely irrelevant. They don't care. They're never going to be more than 6 people. They could use whatever. They could use tarballs. So we're really concentrated on the large projects. So let's talk about how you scale those. I'm not sure if giving Linus credit for how this process emerged is accurate or not. It was sort of organic. Things just kind of happened as time went on. And the concept of a lieutenant emerged where there'd be somebody who was, you know, one of those guys who thought he was a genius but actually was relatively intelligent and would emerge as somebody that knew a particular area. Like Dave Miller emerged as a guy who knew Spark and networking. And Garzik emerged as one of the networking driver guys, and you know, there's all sorts of different. There's probably a couple dozen lieutenants that have different areas that they're experts in. And what would happen is you create this sort of fan in, fan out model where instead of trying to get your changes in through Linus, because Linus had a way of dealing with overload that wasn't well publicized. I think people kind of know about it now, but his way of dealing with it was, you would send a mail, and if he was too busy, he'd just like hold down the delete key in his mail reader, and just all that crap's gone. And you know, people go, well, what? You did what? And you say, look, you know, if it's important, they'll send it to me again, right? He very much viewed his mail reader as a TCP, you know, and sort of like, yeah, it'll retransmit if it's important. But eventually, the smart people caught on to this, and they started patch bombing him. Right, they make cron jobs that once a day would just blast all the patches at him again and say, take my patches, take my patches. And, you know, you can hold down the delete key pretty well. And so people eventually figured out, well, okay, let us trust Dave Miller if it's about networking. So if I give Dave my patch and Dave blesses it, you know, it's not like all the mail goes to the same mailbox. There's a generic mailbox, but mail from Dave goes to the networking mailbox, and Linus actually reads that one. So let me send my stuff in through Dave, and then it's got a better chance to go in. And so the model, the approach he was trying to take was a divide and conquer model, right? Give somebody control over a subsection, let them be the filter for that. Then he pulls a lot of stuff in from them. If it's somebody he really trusts, it just goes in. If it's somebody he kind of trusts, he reviews it. It's a classic sort of divide and conquer. And theoretically, and in theory and practice, theoretically, it gives you a log-in reviewing cost, but it just didn't really work. Why not? Well, so here's the problem. Development changes, patches, diffs, wads of stuff are flowing up through each maintainer or lieutenant, and then down and back up to Linus, and then down again. And so here's the problem. You got this flat sort of wad of a dozen maintainers. One of those guys gets lucky this release cycle, and their stuff that they submitted went in. So when Linus does a release and they compare it, they go, ah, ha, ha, I won. No merge for me. The other 11 out of 12, they got stuff that they wanted to get in that didn't get in. Other stuff did get in, and they got to merge it. So all that's really happened is that Linus is now scaling, but the maintainers are in what they call merge hell. And they literally call it merge hell. And every time Linus would do a tarball release, these guys would spend anywhere from a day to a week full time merging their set of untaken changes with the stuff that just came down. So it's sort of like, well, all right, This doesn't really work that well, because the more maintainers you add, the worse, you know, he's not going to take all that work. He's going to take one or two of them, and the rest of them are going to be sitting there screwed. And it just doesn't, it basically doesn't scale. So you could have a flat structure. You don't have this merging problem because you have less in each wad, but that doesn't scale because Linus can't handle all the load. You can have a layered structure, which causes more merging, but it doesn't scale because now all the lieutenants are just completely swamped. All right, so basically we're screwed, right? So here we get to do our marketing fluff slide, the Delta development model. I'm a techie, I hate this marketing stuff, but we need to name it something. This is basically saying, take the theory of the Linus model and make it work. And the problem isn't that the model is flawed, the model is great. The problem is that the tools don't work. That's really all the problem was. You couldn't really do this with CVS. You couldn't do it with Perforce. You couldn't do it with any of the other tools. You need a tool that has a different model. And you can then create this kind of workflow, right? And this is why we call it the Delta development model, because those are little triangles and triangles, Greek symbol for Delta, blah, blah, blah. All right. So what exactly is it? It's just better technology applied to the open source development model for large projects. It allows the model to work without creating a merge hell. And, you know, there isn't anything new here other than we built tools that actually do the merges for you. And I should probably spend a little time justifying that, because just waving my hands and saying that it works is kind of like a little bit too much like marketing. In source management systems, if you're a manager and you watch your engineers work, most of the time they're not actually driving a source management system. They occasionally type something to do a checkout. They occasionally type something to do a check-in. But if you see an engineer sitting behind the source management tool doing anything for more than 2 minutes, he's merging, or she's merging, or they're both merging, right? How many people here have done a merge that has merge conflicts? You had to resolve the merge conflicts. Yes. How many people liked it?
That worked out well.
It just basically sucks, right? Because it's, you know, everything's kind of come together and it doesn't work very well. Well, so we produced BitKeeper, and BitKeeper allowed the model to work, but it actually didn't do the merge as well either. And we had customers that were using it, and Linus was using it, and we cooked on the merge problem for 3 years trying to figure out a better answer. And, you know, the merge algorithm that we have is our secret sauce. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'll tell you how you can understand that it actually works better. If we have parallel development where we have a common ancestor, right, and this side of the room makes 27 deltas to some file, and that side of the room makes 40 deltas to the same file, and now we're trying to merge all that crap together. I got 27 patches over here. I got 40 patches over here. And now I want to merge them all together. In any other tool, you do diff 3, right? You go to the common ancestor and you diff that against the collection of all these patches. And you go over here and you diff that here. Do you guys know what diff 3 is and how it works? How many people? Okay. How many people here know how to read the output of diff? I mean, you know, stuff on the left, stuff on the right, right? Okay, so the concept of diff 3 is you run diff twice against a common baseline for the guy, for, you know, baseline against your changes. And let's say that we got really lucky and we had a 100-line file and all of you guys whacked the top 40 lines. Over here, we had same 100-line file. All these guys whacked the bottom 40 lines. I do a diff. And it says, okay, top 40 lines are here, but this side didn't touch the top 40 lines. Cool. And bottom 40 lines over here, this side didn't touch them. That's an auto merge because it doesn't overlap and you just slide it together. You know, diff 3 is just processing two diff outputs and saying, can I auto merge all this crap? The problem is, as that works really well if we got little tiny diffs that are spread out throughout the file. If we have little tiny diffs that don't overlap, I can auto-merge all that stuff together. Everything works really well. Doesn't work so well when you start having big wads of diffs. And we got 27 changes over here, and we got 40 changes over here. They're all going boom, right? And you are sitting there in some crappy merge tool clicking and typing away. Well, the way to understand that we've actually done something different is, I said 27 and 40. We essentially, you could think of it as we run 27 plus 40 diffs and merge them incrementally. We don't actually do it like that because that would be incredibly slow, but that's the amount of information we're using. So we take a large patch and turn it into a series of small patches and use the information that was kept along the way to do merges better. And it works quantifiably better. You can, a customer of ours took our revision history, you know, they evaluated BitKeeper and did a bunch of work in it, realized they could play back the history into other systems and redo the merges. And the other systems were auto-merging about 55% and getting part of it wrong, about 10% of it wrong. We were auto-merging 89% and getting 100% of it right. The definition of wrong versus right is wrong is after the auto-merge, you look at it and you go, that's not right, and there's fix-up last merge is the next delta to the file. Right is there's no fix-up last merge because it did what you wanted it to do. So if you agree with the idea that what people do with source management tools is merging, and the lieutenant certainly agreed with that, having a tool that auto-merges almost twice as often as the other tools, that's a huge win. And then we used Osterhout's TickleTK toolkit to write you a nice graphical three-way file merge for the stuff that actually conflicts. So the Delta Development Model is just a marketing term that describes a way of using BitKeeper that makes the process work, right? It's technology that makes the process work. And if you review, you know, commercial was sacrifice quality to get time to market. Open source was sacrifice time to market to get quality. This model is saying you use the open source model and get quality and time to market. And that's, you know, it sounds like marketing fluff. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm not a marketing fluff kind of guy. So then the next question is, did it really work? Right? I mean, you know, everybody wants to know, does it actually work or is it marketing fluff? Well, here's how you know it's not marketing fluff. This happened about a year ago that I was interviewing somebody and he didn't really seem like a match, and I was asking him, why do you want to work here? And he said, well, I hang out on the kernel list and it's obvious that things are working 10 times better than they used to work. I was like, 10 times better? You know, it's like I knew the tool was good, but 10 times better, that's got to be BS. And I started talking to the lieutenants because I know all of them and said, so some guy, you know, you're going to laugh, but some guy said things are working 10 times better. Ha ha, right? And they said, Miller said, you know, 10 is not unreasonable. It's at least 8 times better for me. And Garzik said, oh, man, it's got to be at least 10 times better. Because remember, the guys I'm talking to are the second-level lieutenants. They lived in merge hell, and it used to take them up to a week to do a merge afterwards. And it's like taking them 10 minutes, right? Yeah, to them, that's 10 times better. But, you know, if you go, well, okay, so for a handful of very important people, it's 10 times better. What about over the whole tree? So we looked at a bunch of different ways of measuring it. What we ended up measuring was just how much the tree had changed in the 2 years that it had been in BitKeeper versus how much it had changed the preceding 2 years. There's probably more people working on it now than there were then, so it's not a completely fair comparison. But it was changing twice, 2.5 times as fast. And anybody who looked at the patch rate that Linus was absorbing, that's the metric I would love to have, is how many patches did he hold down the delete key on before and just toss, and how many has he taken out? We don't know the answer for the stuff before, but he is processing 50 patches a day, 365 days a year. That's the average patch rate. I mean, that's, and the kernel is not going into garbage. That's just phenomenal. I mean, I run engineering at Bitmover, and if I process a dozen patches a week, I think I'm doing well. So he's got a much larger organization than I do, but still, that's pretty phenomenal. All right, so far this has mostly been hand-waving, a little bit about merges, but basically, given that BitKeeper is the enabling technology that could get you that kind of result, let's talk about it a little bit. While I look and see how far I am, yeah, okay. So what is it? it's a distributed source management system, right? Remember I said that it's peer-to-peer and decentralized and blah, blah, blah? Well, we're going to talk about that. The model is, unlike CVS, where you have a database server, the CVS server over here, and then a workspace with clear text over here, BitKeeper, it's like everybody gets the CVS server. We replicate the revision history. If you want to think of it as a database, it's a replicated database where we know how to merge the database. This has a lot of interesting, and I'm going to run you through pictures that show you how this works, but it's got a lot of interesting implications. It's a pull-push model. You know, the databases are not automatically synchronized. If you've got stuff that you want from me, you say, Larry, could you please pull from here, and I pull it. Or if I've given you permission to push into my database, you just push directly to it. It's peer-to-peer. There's no enforced hierarchy. Every workspace can be the server, and every workspace can be a client. So there's no difference between a server and a client. It's not a client-server model at all. It's got a concept of formal change sets. A change set is just our name for a patch, though it actually implies more than a patch, but it's a thing that spans multiple files, and it's an immutable atomic unit of work. And there's a lot of work that's gone into BitKeeper for parallel development, all the stuff about auto-merging and merging. That's really, in many respects, our claim to fame, though it's kind of a mistake to think that's it, because there's a ton of other stuff that went into BitKeeper that actually makes that possible. So that's an identifiable component, but that's not the whole deal. Oh, and the other thing is, how many people here understand why you tag the tree in CVS? Okay, for the people who don't, CVS is not a very reproducible system. And if you don't tag the tree and you need to roll back, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. So if you know you might need to roll back, then you tag the tree, which is a slow, complicated, well, not complicated, it's just a slow process. In BitKeeper, there isn't any way to check in a change that isn't like you tag the tree. Every commit is a 100% reproducible snapshot of the tree. Contents, path names, file permissions, whether the file is a symbolic link or a regular file, I mean, everything. My wife was the software release manager at SGI, and, you know, she vetted this stuff. She said, well, people don't tag the tree, and then I can't, you know, we can't fix bugs. It's like, yeah, okay, got it. It's covered. All right, so this is a picture I was waving my hands about. You know, this is CVS and all the stuff at the bottom. Those are workspaces. All that's in those, clear text. There's no revision history. It's essentially, I sort of think of this as basic check-in and check-out parallelized to one database, right? There's some locking that goes on in the database to make sure that you don't check in while I'm trying to check in, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so what's the BitKeeper model look like? Everybody always looks at this slide and goes, huh? Don't worry about it. We're going to go backwards and work up to it. But this is actually a fairly simplistic, very small group set of people that could work this way. Remember, every workspace is a repository. The one that we're calling the main repository, that's just a workspace that we happen to be calling the main repository. There's no difference between it and any of the other ones. So you can have this hierarchy. One of the first places that people use this, let me back up. Let me walk through it. So this is how people start using BitKeeper, and it looks just like the CVS picture, right? You allocate a repository, you hang some people off of it, you go up and down, that's all you do. It's like, well, what's the advantage of that? Well, you can start doing stuff like this. It's possible to synchronize sideways, right? How many people here know what breaking the tree means? There's some people here. How many people here have suffered a lot of pain? Oh, cool, you're all future BitKeeper customers. That is it. John asked, do we have a sales force? And I should have told him, this is really the answer. Here's how we do sales. People say, why should I use this instead of CVS? And we say, does CVS hurt? They say, no. We say, go use CVS, you're fine. And if they say CVS hurts, we go, tell me where it hurts. And somebody will start talking about merges, or they'll talk about renames, or they'll talk about somebody breaking the tree, or they'll talk about, you know, whatever. And we go, yes, okay, we are Novocaine for source management. Sign a check and the pain will go away. And that's literally, we used to try to be proactive and sell the product, and everybody would just get very, you know, oh, no, it can't possibly be better than CVS, blah, blah, blah. And the more you try and tell them it's better than CVS, the less they listen. And so we finally just said, if CVS doesn't hurt, keep using it. It's fine, right? I mean, if you're not driving it hard enough for it to hurt, then you should never pay. I mean, our stuff is outrageously expensive. Shouldn't pay for it unless it's making the pain go away. At any rate, breaking the tree is frequently done when somebody wants some stuff, and So they get somebody else to push that stuff in the tree so they can get it, right? You know, give me your stuff. And I need a recorded snapshot of it because I want to merge it with mine, blah, blah, blah. So they push it into the tree, and it's not really ready yet. And so, well, okay, their buddy could get the stuff, and now they can work on it together, but they've screwed everybody else who's hanging off of that tree. You know, don't update now. I push bad garbage into the tree. You know, just sit there, right? And so, you know, with BitKeeper, it's entirely possible for you to say, I need your stuff. Check it in. And he checks it into his local revision history. It's not anywhere else. And I pull from him. I'm pulling sideways. It's never gone through the main repository at all. And people do this all the time. This is incredibly common. Here's another one. This is actually the most common first, the most commonly realized value proposition out of BitKeeper. Sorry, it's sort of a bunch of buzzwords. But, you know, it's different technology. It works differently than CVS. Where is the place that people first get the value from it? This is it right here. I call this the throwaway merge. And it's not always a throwaway merge, but it's you got something, he's got something, you got something. We want to see if those somethings will work together. We don't want to push it into the tree because it's not really cooked yet, right? So I just create I clone your repository, I pull from yours, I pull from yours. I've got something that's, you know, the only place the merge data exists is in that merge and test repository. There's no branch that was created in a CVS repository. I didn't pollute the tree. It doesn't exist anywhere else. So I can merge and test. And given that we got this great auto merge technology, most of the time it's auto merge and test, which is really nice. And if it turns out that it's all cool and I like it, then you can push it up into the main integration tree and away you go. If it turns out that it's not cooked yet, I can either leave the merge and test tree there and say, hey, dude, your stuff, I'm not so great. Go fix it. Or I can just throw the merge and test away, right? So one way to think about it is in BitKeeper, every repository is a branch. Everywhere else that you've thought of branches, BitKeeper, the model is a repository is a branch, but it's kind of a funky branch. It's a lightweight branch, and it goes away if you delete the repository. If you haven't propagated it anywhere else, it's go away. So that is a different way of thinking about things, right? You could do everything you could do in BitKeeper, theoretically, in CVS, aside from the rename stuff, just by creating zillions and zillions of branches. But, do you really want to have zillions and zillions of branches in CVS that you really wanted to throw away, right? That's a lot of the value is being able to throw stuff away when you don't want it. Okay, here's another one. Suppose that we had the previous picture where we got John sitting over here on the side, and let's say John was some guy who was working on a bug fix, right? But John's a great engineer, and John got really bored working on that bug fix, and he went and hacked in some feature. And his management comes by to see how John's doing, John demos this cool feature, and they go, you know, I should be pissed that you didn't fix the bug, but this is really cool. We could sell this. Let's, is it ready? And John goes, no, it's not ready. I'm going to need a docs person and a test person and da-da-da-da-da. And in any other system, in order to have dealt with that scenario, you would have had to have created a branch for John's stuff. And if it was any non-trivial amount of stuff, John's got a bunch of changes in there, right? You're not going to create a new product with, like, you know, five lines of diffs. So in another system, you would be stuck with creating a branch to isolate John from the main area, right? Then sort of carrying the changes across by hand and then hanging people off of that. In BitKeeper, you just say, okay, clone John's area down to a sub-repository, hang the other people off of that sub-repository, and boom, it's like no fuss, no muss. You don't need to know ahead of time that you needed to change the rules. So the peer-to-peer system, it's really pleasant because it's like beforehand, I had to plan ahead. The problem is everybody who tells you, you know, I run a company. And anybody who tells you that they actually do any planning and they know what they're going to be doing a year from now, they are friggin' lying to you. They have a vague idea of what they're going to be doing in a year from now. They have some goals about what would be happening a year from now. But whether they actually reach those goals and whether those goals are really what they end up deciding they want to be, you know, it doesn't work that way. So it is really nice having a system that says, I don't care how you want to divide this stuff up, you know, you just tell me and divide it up. Okay, so trying to summarize this stuff, because as exciting as source management is, I suppose you guys are probably getting pretty bored. It's really exciting. It is exciting if you do a distributed system. It's really, I used to claim to Linus that this stuff is a lot harder than working on a multi-threaded kernel. And he sort of went, yeah, sure. But when he started to use it, I went down to his office. He was still at Transmeta. And we spent 4 hours in a whiteboard talking about how it actually works. And he sent me mail the next morning going, yeah, you're right. I'm impressed. It's harder than working on a multi-threaded kernel. It's more like working on a replicated file system where everybody has a write lock all the time. There is no write lock. Anybody can be putting stuff into that directory slot the same time somebody else is putting stuff into that directory slot. The directories are replicated, and now the things come together, and you got to do the right thing. And there's some stuff that we automatically manage, and you got to do the right thing where it doesn't oscillate. Because it's not just enough to do the right thing, and then something else comes in, and it shoves it over here, and then something else comes in, and it shoves over here, and you get this oscillation. You actually have to do convergence in it, and that gets to be... The problem is actually, you know, I know it's boring on the surface, but it's actually a pretty fun problem to work on. We have a lot of fun with it. Anyway, every repository is a full replica. You can have a multi-level hierarchy. That's a very common usage model of BitKeeper. Sun uses a system that I wrote that's somewhat similar to this. And the most common way they use it is put staging areas, you know, networking's underneath their tree. And, you know, the file system has their staging area and so on and so forth. So now when somebody integrates in and breaks the tree, they're breaking their local staging area, and the people who are yelling at them are the guys who are 2 doors down on the hallway. It's not somebody from some building 6 buildings over, you know. So your embarrassment is contained to your group who already know that you're a bumpkin, so it's, you know, it's kind of okay. It's really annoying when somebody breaks something that some other random place. The peer-to-peer nature is what allows you to create arbitrary workflows, right? If anybody here uses ClearCase, knows about Rational's unified change management thing, that's just a series of repositories with a, you know, pulling the changes through it. It's trivial to create that in BitKeeper. Blah, blah, blah. Let's see what else we got to say. So change sets are a key piece of this technology. It's a logical unit of work. That's what propagates between a repository. That's key feature. That was a design decision. It's a policy that's built into the tool. You can check into files without creating a change set, without binding the files together. But if you check into files and somebody else tries to pull that out of your repository, they won't get anything. Because until they're bound into a change set, nothing propagates. Because, you know, I knew we more or less pushed the change set word into the consciousness of people in the industry. And I knew that if a change set thing was an optional thing, nobody knew what the hell it was. Nobody wants to listen to you about this crap. You guys are very unusual. And try telling engineers, you know, yeah, you got to bind it in a change set. It has all this value. And they're like, yeah, I'm checking it. Leave me alone. Right? So we just said, okay, we'll just make it so that your changes don't go anywhere until you make a change set. And guess what? Everybody goes, oh, okay, that's how the tool works. And then they get the value of the change set stuff later. And the change sets actually turned out to be very valuable. They give you... In BitKeeper, you could go backwards from a line of code to the change set that created that line of code with 2 mouse clicks. So let me say that again, because Borland tried to buy us for $30 million. We said, how about 120? And they said, why? And that feature that I just described is why, because I took it away from one of my support people, and they slowed down by 3.5x. And I rounded up, said 4x. That's what the value of the tool is. So the feature is you can look at any line of code in any file and go backwards to the patch that introduced that line of code. So why is that valuable? If you hit an assert, whatever, you're here, and it's like you're scratching your head over what the hell, right? This is the way that you could get the state that was in somebody's head when they made that change. And having that state that was in their head is, you know, it's huge in terms of how much faster you can debug. All right, so, you know, reproducibility is a big thing. Rollbacks work. Workflow is a big thing. Merge technology is a big thing. Debugging, I knew I had that on a slide somewhere. That's what I was just talking about. This is a marketing fluff slide. Okay, so let's review so that we know what's going on. What was the Delta development model again? It's just a particular workflow that Linus and his lieutenants created that, if it actually works, gives you both quality and high speed. Right? It's a way to say, I want quality control, and I don't want to slow down the development process. And It's a very simple workflow. It's just saying divide and conquer. Allocate somebody who's a sub-maintainer. Let him have a handful of people. And any graphics guy can tell you that if you have triangles as a building block, you can build anything out of a series of triangles, right? Well, so you can build a big triangle out of a series of triangles and get a nice log-n scaler. And so what is BitKeeper's part in all of this? It's basically, it's a peer-to-peer system, right? And the peer-to-peer nature of the system allows this kind of model. The model is very asynchronous. It allows people to move independently. There's not one server that we're talking to. And it's a particular workflow then that BitKeeper enables, mainly because of the replication and the merge technology. And it's worth pointing out, this is just a marketing term for a particular workflow. There are lots of other workflows that BitKeeper supports, right? I mean, we support our customers after the sale. That's one of the reasons we charge high prices, is that after the sale, we work with you until the product is actually doing what you want. And a lot of that boils down to, during the sales process, you know, they go, well, can it do this, can it do that, blah, blah, blah. We say, yes, it can do this, yes, it can do that, blah, blah, blah. Nobody believes you. Somewhere between 3 weeks and 3 months later, they come back and they say, wow, you know, that stuff you told us, it's actually true. It really, really can do all these different things with it. Now could you tell us, here's the kind of problem we're trying to solve, what works best? And then we start drawing circles and arrows on the whiteboard and get to an answer. So this is just a particular workflow that happens to work very well for the Linux model. You know, anything that doubles productivity, that's huge. We charge for BitKeeper about 1% of the burden cost of an engineer's annual salary, right? So theoretically, maybe it's one, maybe it's two, depends on how cheap you are, right? Theoretically, if the engineer is 2% more productive, you've broken even. If he's 5% more productive, you're way ahead of the game. If there's any plausible way of saying that you could actually double productivity, let's just say sales are pretty easy for us because it's pretty plausible, right? You point at the Linux kernel and say, you go paw through the data and you tell me what you think, right? It's data is nice. All right, so what about other tools? There are a bunch of other tools out there. BitKeeper's kind of opened people's eyes to this different way of doing development. I mean, before this, there was just all these centralized tools. And Darks is a tool that, if you go drive it, feels a lot like BitKeeper. Arch is one that feels more like a patch management system. Monotone is sort of halfway between them. And the question is, can they be used for this? Well, sort of. You know, the problem is they got to scale up. And we think BitKeeper is ridiculously slow, but it's not as slow as these tools. The Linux kernel right now, the 2.6 branch, has about, 55,000, 60,000 change sets in it. 60,000 different patches. Well, most source management systems start falling down right about there. They imported the BitKeeper history into Darks and then tried to do an update, and it took something like 4 hours. Right, and it just thrashed the hell out of the machine. And the same thing in BitKeeper would take, I don't know, 30 seconds for the integrity check and maybe a few, like a minute or two. Right, so there are open source tools that can do this, but you pay for the fact that you're not paying for the product with your time. So if you don't care about your time, way to go. They're getting better. They don't really work. None of the open source tools are ready for the Linux kernel. The open source guys would love to have them be ready for the Linux kernel because BitKeeper is a proprietary product, and that causes, you know, the Stallman people no amount of heartburn because, you know, having a proprietary product being used to develop Linux, which is probably the most visible open source project, is makes Stallman very grumpy. And the problem is this stuff's a lot of work, right? I mean, there's... We're not quite at 100 man years. We're at about 95 man years. That's a lot of man years, right? And the other tools are, you know, 5 man years is probably stretching it. So, yeah, there you go. So what about the more common tools, CVS, versions, all that stuff? Yeah. CVS, Subversion, all those Perforce. All those tools, most source management tools have exactly the same architecture. Database is central, workspace is hanging off of it. They'll give you some kind of branches, but they tend to do really crappy merging between the branches. they're fine as parallel check-in and check-out systems, and for a lot of projects, that's all you need. If you had a half a dozen people, they work great, and if that's what you're working on, just use them. Everybody knows how to drive CVS. It's been around forever. I can't believe there's an engineer on the face of the planet that does any significant amount of open source work that doesn't know how to drive CVS. So they unfortunately, they don't work as what I call a scalable reviewing mechanism, which is really what BitKeeper is trying to enable, right? BitKeeper is really a tool that's designed around the concept of the leader and the maintainers. It doesn't really care about the people at the fringe who are the rank and file check-in and check-outers. Every tool checks in and checks out. That's not that friggin' hard. So who cares about that part? The hard part is how do you help the people who are managing lots of change and lots of workflow? And CVS and Subversion just don't give you any tools to do that. One thing that I didn't talk about very much, Greg Crow Hartman, who's a sort of Linux USB guy, when I was talking to him about why he likes BitKeeper, he said one of the things is it's so asynchronous. I don't have to coordinate with Linus or these other people. If you've got something I want, I can be pulling it. If Linus's tree is, as he's making changes, is made incrementally available between the releases, and you can reach in and pull those into your tree and merge your work with it all the way along rather than one big wad every 3 months. And so the ability for you to decide when you want to merge stuff, you can do it early and often, you can do it late, whatever, that actually turns out to be very pleasant. It doesn't work very well with the CVS model because, you're polluting the main tree. Or you could have Linus's branch and then the main branch, and now you got branch merge hell, right? So it doesn't work very well. I was talking to one of the guys that's a processor guy at Intel, and he was saying, well, CVS could do anything BitKeeper could do. And I pointed out to him that really, if you think about all those repositories as being branches, and I sort of call them branchlets because they're not really branches. They're kind of fork and join type branches. You would have to have, right now, at any given moment, I can go out and count more than 10,000 active repositories of the Linux source base inside of BitKeeper. Every one of those is a branch. Every one of those is potentially diverging. You are not going to have 10,000 branches in CVS. You're not going to have 1,000 branches. It's a concept around sort of lightweight branches that kind of come into existence when they need to come into existence and then go away when they don't need to be there anymore. And centralized tools just don't scale up doing that kind of thing. All right, so we're almost done. You can go away and listen to a hopefully more fun talk. Where we think we're going in the future, I've mentioned this before, we're very much focused on maintainers. Maintainers, we think... We don't have the philosophy that everybody's interchangeable. We think some people are better than other people, which is politically incorrect as hell, but you look at some people are leaders, they manage a lot of code, and some people are kind of rank and file and they hack on their little area. Well, the people who manage a lot of code are leveraging the work of other people. To me as a manager, yes, they are definitely more valuable, and I want tools that make them more leveraged. And that's kind of the direction that we're pushing BitKeeper. We're saying there's some people that have harder problems than other people. Anybody can do check-in and check-out, but managing and reviewing a lot of code, not everybody can do that. So we're building technology for reviews. We're building database technology for reviews. We'll show you a graphical tool that shows you all the lines of code that you haven't reviewed since the last time you looked at this stuff. And there's a little database on the side, and you can say, oh, yeah, okay, I like this, don't like that, like this, like don't like that. Performance is always an issue. I said BitKeeper's faster than the other guys, but it's still ridiculously slow. We integrity check the data, which drives everybody nuts, because the integrity check is opening up every single file, checksumming it, and checking the metadata in it. And we do that every time you update from another repository. So the Linux kernel, hot cache, everything's in main memory on a fast processor, is like 20 seconds. And if it's not in cache, you're slurping it off the disk. If you're the only guy on that disk arm, it's probably a couple, 2-3 minutes. If you're two people beating on the disk arm, forget about it. Come back tomorrow. So it's